Hello and welcome to the Jungle Living Podcast. It is June 2015. My name is Charlie, and I'm joined by two people.
Hello, my name is Eli Sweet.
And I'm Dan, and I'm people.
All right. Today we are talking about summertime in Chengdu. We are doing another quarterly Chengdu Scoop, where we talk about events of the day and basically what's going on this season in Chengdu. So I think the first thing to say is, summertime in Chengdu, for people who haven't experienced it, how would you describe it, Eli? Because you've been here for about as many summers as I have.
I would describe it as euphoric and wonderful and the hottest season of the year. And, you know, surprisingly, a season where the air pollution seems to be a little bit less intense. I think we've had some great weather days over the past couple of months, past couple of weeks especially, and a lot of good activities coming around. It's a wonderful time to be in the city.
We've had phenomenal weather. We've had some of the best weather I've seen here in a very, very long time over the last week.
There's been a couple of days where my WeChat timeline has just gotten blown up with pictures of the skyline, where people are like, I love living in this city. Why aren't you like this all the time? To not be poisoned by the surrounding environment is a wonderful luxury.
Yeah, it really does take your attention away from the poison you're breathing every day.
It does get very hot as well. You know, some people have told me before, Chengdu in summertime is too hot. I really don't mind the heat at all. What I like best about summertime in Chengdu is just the atmosphere. Everyone just seems to be having a great time. There's a lot of activity in the street. In particular, there are a lot of people riding bicycles, going swimming, playing Chinese chess in the street. I love stuff like that. There's just a lot of activity.
Yeah. It's a total night and day difference from the previous couple of months, for sure. You were talking about bike riding. Joined the Natuki bike ride last Friday, this weekend, on Friday. It was so much fun. Good group of people came out. Really, really nice thing to do.
And you were DJing the bike ride, weren't you? You put together the mix for the ride. How did that go?
I wasn't DJing. I put a bunch of songs together, about 2 hours. People seemed to like it. One of the ladies at WoWo asked me for my WeChat so I could share the music with her.
Wow.
I'd also like to say I plan all the music for these podcasts as well. So if you like that music,
check him out on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/
DP_angle. I guess we should just put the link in.
we'll put the link in there.
Yeah.
But the group ride, for anybody who doesn't know, there's a local bicycle shop called Natuki, which we've mentioned many times on this podcast. Every Friday evening at 8 p.m., they have a group bicycle ride, which leaves from their shop in the south of Chengdu. And it's about an hour and a half or so of riding around the city. It's a casual ride at a comfortable pace. And they have usually the 30 to 50 people kind of riding with them, and it's great fun. They also have music on the rides. They have a custom-built bamboo bicycle, which holds some speakers and an MP3 player, and they just kind of cruise around the city playing music, and it's just an amazing event. Anytime I have people visit me in Chengdu, I always take them on the group ride, and that's always one of the most memorable experiences that they have here.
It's a cool way to see the city.
It is. It's a great way to see the city, and it's a perfect event for summertime in particular.
It's basically like the Hell's Angels.
Mm-hmm.
Except with more tight jeans and fixie bikes and less OK Corral style gunfights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really accurate representation of what
it is. Kind of a hipster activity, I suppose. I think quite.
But that's just like one of like many awesome activities, like community activities that you can do around the city. They're like more and more. You just see people putting together these different events and like weekly activities going on.
Yeah, I think actually that's a good thing for us to talk about today, is sort of the emergence of different sub-communities within the city, because that seems like something that is a relatively recent phenomena in the city, and has something that has really emerged, and the sort of self-definition and community formation around various interests is something that's become more differentiated over the past couple of years. And I think we can talk about some of those clubs and some of those activities that have come up. I know that you guys are both involved in the Chengdu Gaming Federation, which is a dark corner for nerds to feel comfortable.
that's pretty accurate. It's
pretty
accurate.
It is dark, and we are nerds. And
right.
Yeah, there's a unbridled sense of passion and nerding out over these video games. It's been a ton of fun.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, Charlie, talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, so there are probably dozens, if not hundreds, of groups like this in Chengdu. I think that all of these groups are kind of aided by technology. They're almost all centered around WeChat. Mm-hmm. And WeChat just makes it so easy to create and maintain groups for, you know, anything, really. But in the case of the Chengdu Gaming Federation, we thought it would be fun to meet at a regular time and a regular place. In our case, it's Wednesday at 9 p.m. at Machu Picchu. And just to play games together, specifically independent multiplayer games. So we're not playing, you know, like Call of Duty or any games like this. All the games we play are really quirky, multiplayer, kind of silly, fun games.
When you say independent multiplayer games, you're talking about things like, and I'm speaking as an outsider here, would this be something like Smash Brothers? Does that fall into that genre? No. What's an example of something that falls into that genre?
Yeah, so Nidhogg would be an example. Probably a bunch of games you've never heard of. Towerfall is one of our favorite games. Kind of, you know, by definition, independent games are not very big. They're not made by big companies like Nintendo, so that would certainly exclude Super Smash Brothers.
Right, okay. All right, but they're games that numerous people can play at the same time?
Yeah, last week we played a game called Gang Beasts where we played seven people simultaneously on a giant projection screen. And it's like a humorous wrestling game where you have seven players who are all trying to, you know, grab each other. I mean, it's ridiculous. Most of the games we play are like fairly ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why it's fun. But there are a lot of groups like this in Chengdu right now, and it's really cool because expats who are living in the city have this huge selection of different activities and interest groups in the city, which make it really easy to find a community and find your place and find, you know, similar friends.
Mm-hmm. I think you're very correct that the WeChat and the social media tools have enabled that kind of community formation. I mean, part of it's just the maturation of the expat community here, people being here for a longer time and seeking out people of similar interests, but to really be able to link together and organize stuff, having WeChat is so, so useful. What are some of the other events or organizations that have sprung up similar to the Gaming Federation? We could look at the Natuki bike rides. We could look at the Gaming Federation. Another sort of community circle that we were talking about just a minute ago is the expat community that sprung up around summertime poolside fun, if you mm-hmm. will. Many expats who've been in the city for a long time know that there is a popular pool at the Orchard Villas on Renmin Nanlu, just south of Second Ring Road, near the Tongzilin metro station exit.
Mm-hmm.
And on the weekends, there's lots of foreigners who will go there and hang out poolside, play a little bit of volleyball, sit in the sun, maybe drink a beer, splash around.
Yeah, entrance is 30 quid to get in. If they stop you at the entrance, I've seen people just walk past. But yeah, it's a really, really nice little oasis in the middle of the city. Like you get there and you don't feel like you're in the middle of this giant metropolis. It's nice. It's quiet. It's in Tongzhen.
There's trees around it.
Trees.
There's more expats than there are Chinese people at this pool.
Yeah.
And strangely, there's often not a lot of people swimming there. I don't really know what that's about.
Right. People are just sitting on chairs alongside, listening to music and shooting the shit.
Right.
Dan was just saying that he's in a WeChat group, which is basically centered around informing people who's at the pool and what's happening at the pool.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually not me sending those messages.
Is that a pool club or what is that?
No, it's just, I don't know. WeChat groups pop up about anything.
They really do.
And
yeah.
So this one has managed to find its identity centered on the pool.
What are some of the more random WeChat groups that you guys have found yourself a party to?
Yeah, so I was just had a conversation about one today. So there was an event yesterday, a party in Chengdu, and someone made a group for the pre-party for that party. And I was like, what is this group for? I said that in the group, and they were like, is it not clear from the title? And I was like, all right, then I just exited.
It's like Tasty Buns or something.
It's like pre-party discussion group or something. Yeah.
Charlie is like, he's the guy who's quickest on the trigger to like leave a WeChat group that he feels like he doesn't belong in.
Well, actually, I have four WeChat groups which are pinned to the top of my WeChat along with my girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, there are so many of these groups and they're such a big part of WeChat. They're kind of one of the coolest things about WeChat is how quickly and easily you can make things like that happen.
Yeah.
But I really want to limit my use of those groups because it just gets out of control.
Right, right. They'll kind of fill up your chat role if you don't differentiate the ones that you want to use and the ones you don't.
You have four conversations stickied?
Four groups stickied, yes.
Okay.
I probably need to do that because there's one group that I'm in that has like 1,000 people and it's constantly full up with stuff. And there's a bunch of Sinostage groups that I'm in as well that are really heavily trafficked and I don't have that much to contribute to, but they stay at the top of my chat role for that reason.
Yeah, what I found, you've got to mute notifications for those groups. But even if you do that, if you've got too many of these groups, when you open your WeChat, it'll just be red dots everywhere.
Right. And my notifications are muted because I can't have my phone blowing up all the time. But still, when I go into the chat role, you know, they're filling up the top.
But one thing about groups we have to talk about was a really great post, which was published recently on Chengdu Living. Why don't you describe that post? It's about groups in Chengdu.
Hyobin, who is not a frequent contributor, I think this was her first article for Chengdu Living. But yeah, so she wrote an article on living with purpose in Chengdu. And I think that's something that maybe people aren't able to or haven't put their finger on it, but I think it's a really crucial aspect of living a happy life. And it's kind of abstract. How do you find a way to live with purpose? She, instead of relying on platitudes or anything, she offered a lot of like really good concrete suggestions on how to get more out of your life here. And I mean, this is something that we've talked before about, like a couple podcasts ago when we talked about it, is life in China, is it quote unquote real life? I think following some of the suggestions in her post could really help you, find your identity and find your purpose in the city and kind of contribute and become a little bit more invested in the community here.
What were some of the groups that she talked about in there? She certainly mentioned her own thing, which is the secondhand story.
Mm-hmm. I don't know too much about secondhand story. Do you want to describe
it? Sure. So it's like a secondhand organization, right? So you donate items which you own, which you don't use. Mm-hmm. They could be musical instruments or clothes or anything like this, any kind of objects. But it's not just about the object itself. It's all about the story of the object and where it came from and who the original owner was. Mm-hmm. And so when you acquire items or when you donate items to this organization, you're kind of, you know, including this narrative of like where the item came from and where it's going and what it means to you and things like this, which is kind of an interesting twist on, you know, goodwill, which is completely lacking any kind of narrative.
Right, right. It's just very anonymous. It's just like, oh, I like those pink shorts.
I think sometimes people can perceive the narrative or imagine it behind a lot of these objects of goodwill. You know, it's like the charm or character of something which is unusual or offbeat, which really makes it more attractive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it really does potentially increase the value of these objects to their future consumers if you frame them within the story of this object's backstory, and give people a reason to cherish it and to invest some emotional resonance in this particular purchase. I think it's actually a really savvy way to make people more interested in crap that people might otherwise discard or overlook or just be disinterested in. Mm.
One person's crap is another person's story.
Yeah.
That's not their tagline, and I'm not going to recommend that they make that their tagline. Just kind of off the cuff. Besides her, does she have a storefront for that? Or
it's mostly through WeChat, actually. Okay. I think she actually goes to places and physically picks them up.
Okay, cool. So beyond secondhand story, which is really awesome and kind of unlike anything I've heard about before. She found other or recommended other communities to join. Like there's the swing dance in Chengdu group, which meets at the Shamrock weekly. And I've met Matt, who organizes that. He's a really cool guy. There's the Bookworm Writing Group, the Rotary Club of Chengdu, which is involved in a lot of charity efforts, mm-hmm. and some other groups as well. And beyond that, I had written a post a while ago that I haven't published yet, but I was collecting basically the same kind of information about meetup groups in mm-hmm. Chengdu. Poker, the Natuki ride, mm-hmm. People who play different sports. I'm kind of drawing blanks right now about the other groups. But there's really no shortage. And if you have an interest, there are almost definitely other people who share that interest and who, if they're not already getting together, they would want to get together. So it's really all about finding your community and finding people with shared interests.
Well, I think that's something that we definitely want to support with the site, is give another platform for people who have shared interests to go and meet and exchange information and connect with like-minded people out there. because it does provide some meaning. I mean, it's not just a way to kill time. I think one of the good points in her article is that it's not just a way to fill up your schedule. It's actually a way to bring more meaning to your life and make you a more happy and productive individual, as well as, you know, connect with other friends and meet friends or romantic interests or things along those lines. You know, another thing that's sort of along the lines of more traditional social organizations is sports. And there's a lot of different sports organizations that people connect with other people through. Obviously, there's the Chengdu International Football League, which is a soccer group that meets every weekend and has various teams that compete. There's a rugby team that plays in Chengdu. They just have one team, and they compete against teams from other cities and occasionally organize tournaments.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things about the sports groups is that they do a lot of traveling. And mm-hmm. so the football group will be going to Chongqing together later this month. Like you said, the rugby group often they'll either invite other cities to Chengdu and host like Chongqing, Kunming, Guizhou, or different cities here, or they'll go traveling out there. There's also an Ultimate Frisbee group that, if you want the WeChat group for that, I have that. Some of the, like, sometimes if you don't have WeChat, is limited by the people that you know on WeChat already, or the people who can give you like a recommendation for a group that already exists. I think one of the benefits of Chengdu Living and the forum there is that you can kind of just like send out a signal and say, I'm looking for this group, and see if anybody bites or has a response. So that's, I think, one benefit of the forum that kind of that's basically the only way that the forum trumps WeChat. We're big WeChat fans, but right. The forum also has this really particular use.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on some of those different types of groups that you were mentioning, there's also an American football team called the Chengdu Mustangs, I want to say, that competes as well and trains together. They also have an ancillary cheerleading team that meets as well. There is also a BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, studio and squad competitive.
They do practices on Sunday nights, right? Mm-hmm. And that's Andrew runs that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Andrew, I forget his name, but a very nice gentleman who's mm-hmm. a good competitor, serious competitor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd be interested in learning about that. I didn't know that was here. We interviewed someone, Jamie, who was a blue belt, I believe, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu about maybe 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I know that Jerry is still here, I think. Yep. He's a black belt.
Yep. And, you know, the mixed martial arts community in Chengdu is something that's really been exploding. Obviously, we had the podcast with Vaughn Blood Anderson a little while ago. There was also a bunch of local mixed martial arts competitions, events that have been happening recently. I was just looking this weekend at a bunch of footage from Quinlan fights. Because they were broadcasting a lot of stuff on WeChat, moments from their fights, and the former UFC light heavyweight title contender Anthony Johnson was out in Chengdu a couple months ago teaching workshops with local Chinese fighters. So I think that's another area of sort of middle-class hobbyists that's growing in China, in the same way that you see the dance community growing, or the fix-it bicycle community growing, or the pet culture growing, something that, you know, people having more developed hobbies and taking more interest and investing more time and money into hobbies that they take very seriously. And that's cool. To me, that's actually an indicator of China's economic evolution and sort of the evolution of civil society organizations. It's not exactly the same as the kind of civil society that we have in the States, but it's third. I forget what they call it in sociology, like the third kind of spaces, not home, not work, but the things that people do in their free time that constitutes social connections, either through schools or through churches or through other kinds of activities. And you see the flourishing of those other kinds of activities in Chinese life right now, and definitely in the expat community as well.
Yeah, it used to be a favorite this topic of conversation about what Chengdu lacks or what Chengdu doesn't have. But right now it's kind of exploding.
That would be a shorter discussion than Chengdu does have. Yeah.
Absolutely.
One of the cool groups, which we haven't mentioned yet, is the movie group at Machu Picchu. And so the Chengdu Gaming Group meets every Wednesday at 9 p.m. But just before that, from 7:30 until 9 p.m., they watch a different movie every week.
And they have a really, really cool selection of movies. Yeah, I've caught the tail end of a lot of these movies, and they seem pretty offbeat, independent, not widely released. I don't really...
They're almost all Chinese films.
Yeah.
They have English subtitles. And a lot of them are independent films. Mm-hmm. So they're really, really cool films, and I think that the organizers of the night are pretty knowledgeable on Chinese cinema in particular.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like they've got a inside knowledge about what some
good movies are.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, so it's great to see these things. Because Eli and I, when we first came to Chengdu, there was none of this stuff was here. I mean, none of the things which we've mentioned, really. I mean, were there football groups then?
Not really, to be honest. Not independent expat-run ones. At that time, we were all participating in the local Chinese football league. And it's only within the last 3 or 4 years that an independent foreign-run football organization has emerged. And I think that its emergence has come in parallel with a lot of these other independent organizations that cater to the very diverse hobbies of both Chinese people as well as the expat community here. It's amazing how much they flourished, and you know how you were just saying, Dan, that it's almost like a joke the way that it's become inverted, where it used to be all about what we lack, and now it's amazing how much we have. I was having a conversation a couple weeks ago with some journalists who were passing through town, you know, these people from Yahoo News and the LA Times and the Washington Post, and they were meeting with myself and a couple other people from the American Chamber of Commerce, and I was talking to them specifically about the entrepreneurship community and how it's amazing how many different people are starting their own business and how people are starting up not just sort of nonprofit organizations and clubs for people to hang out with, but also people who are branching out and starting their own companies in, you know, widely varying areas.
These are like expats who are coming to Chengdu to start businesses?
Yeah, that's right. And I was actually making a joke with them that the degree of saturation of entrepreneurship has hit the point where it's even a joke on our WeChat feed. You guys may remember the post that Brandon had the other day that was like, if I see another post for an entrepreneurship meetup group, I'm gonna punch somebody in the face.
Right, startup meetup.
Yes, yeah, startup meetups. Groups. And the reason that there's startup meetups, I mean, that's again like a secondary kind of organization that evolves around all of the businesses that are emerging. And we personally know people who have started businesses in a huge variety of fields, from aquaculture to dance to bars to English schools to fix-it bike shops to homemade beauty products to craft beer, to a whole variety of things.
Bespoke suits,
yeah. And so I think, again, that sort of speaks to the maturation of the business culture here in the city, and where it's not like 5 years ago where the only people that we knew who were starting businesses were starting English schools, and the only people we knew that were starting clubs were starting like sports clubs, you know.
Now we got gaming clubs. How far we've come.
Yeah.
Moving back indoors. All right. So is there anything more to say on meetup groups? Or should we move on to topics of the summer?
You should publish your post about your groups. But for now, we'll link to the story which we have on groups in Chengdu, which is a great primer.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be good if we sort of kept a running tally of all the groups that are operating and their contact information, so that we can kind of be a hub for people who are looking to get involved in that. And when people start to organize their own groups, you know, please reach out to us and we'll try to help promote them on the site and connect you to other people with similar interests.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we'll do that. I mean, we've been working on something related to that for quite a long time. A place where we can list all the groups and all the events, and specifically which are happening in Chengdu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, beyond just like the general information, we also really want to include the QR code for the WeChat group, so mm-hmm. people can be kept up to date. Because I remember one group invited or posted on the forum that they were going to do meetups. I think it was a photography group, and they decided to do it through a LinkedIn group.
That was such a horrible idea.
It was
They
terrible.
Said, hey, we're doing a photography group. Send me an email if you're interested.
Yeah.
And it's like, why don't you just post the location and time and what you're going to do here so that anyone can determine
whether or not And I can understand why some people might not want to open up their group to like...
the general public?
Yeah.
The unwashed masses?
Yeah, exactly. Filthy, filthy podcast listeners.
The hoi polloi.
But yeah, that just ended up... I would be surprised if they're still like meeting up.
Yeah, well, you know, point being, utilize the tools at your disposal for connecting people, because they work pretty darn well. And the way to have a successful group is to get the community engaged so that the community is carrying itself and you don't have to, you know, push everything yourself. I think actually one of the great things about those social media tools is that it allows for everybody to be sort of equally involved in contributing to the planning process, which means it doesn't have to be such a top-heavy organizational structure as you might have mm-hmm. with like a traditional like, oh, I am the board leader for this organization and I will call everybody, because then you're dependent on that one person's efforts.
You want to cast as wide a net as you can. You want to get people interested.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So what else for summertime? One thing I'm really looking forward to is a particular music festival. And in general, music festivals in summertime are kind of one of my favorite things in Chengdu. For the last 6 years, 5-6 years or so, we've had at least one, if not two music festivals. I mean, big music festivals with like over 20,000 people mm-hmm. in Chengdu. And these are kind of big events for summertime. The one we have coming up soon is Strawberry Music Festival. You guys have been to this, yes?
I have not been.
Is that the one in 2012? Was it at the Poly Park in Chengdu?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I was at that one. That was dope. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And all I the trappings this... of like an actual music festival.
Right. I think this is the third one. And...
Yeah.
Sloppy foreigners, is that a thing for music festivals?
Yeah,
absolutely. Shirtless men drunk and asleep in a tent.
Basically, yeah.
I don't think there's camping there.
No camping? Well, there was camping at the one that I remember. Anyways, I haven't been here for the past
couple years. You may have gone
to
Zebra as well. Yeah. So there's been Zebra and Strawberry have been the two major music festivals over the last couple of years. This one this year is on Saturday and Sunday, June 13th and 14th.
And are you going to be DJing there, Charlie?
I am going to. And that's actually next weekend. So it's a 1 week from now.
Holy shit, so I got to get this podcast out fast, huh?
You got to get this podcast out fast.
So if you're listening to this, it's probably happening right now. You need to head out the door, go get the Uber, and go take it out to... Where is the festival grounds? How far away is it from the city center?
It's at the Poly Park. It's probably about 25 minutes in an Uber. Mm-hmm. It's right near the Panda base.
Okay.
Yeah, I would just like to take this moment to say that this podcast is sponsored by Uber. Yeah. Chengdu Living.
If only.
Chengdu Living is paid for. The servers are paid for by Uber. Rent is paid for by Uber.
We put out a large variety of content, which is all a cover to hide our ulterior motives, which is to promote Uber. I mean, we started this site several years before Uber actually arrived here as a red herring to throw people off the trail. This is all a promotional tool for Uber. No, you know, that's a joke in response to some of the negative comments that we received for our glowing reviews of Uber in the city. And, I understand the criticism of people who may think that we're giving Uber a pass or that we're painting an unbalanced and, you know, rosy picture of what Uber does here. But I would just say genuinely that everything that we write about Uber or that we write about anything is, you know, comes from our genuine emotions that we feel about it. And in the case of Uber, it's made our lives much more convenient in a variety of ways and has just forced the transportation market to become more efficient. Even if you don't look at Uber itself, but look at the secondhand effects of Uber on other taxi businesses, they've forced them to be more competitive and more responsive to consumers and more engaged with the technology, and that's something that's beneficial to all of us.
Yeah, I think we've said everything that we've wanted to say in defense of our own.
I think it's kind of fascinating because
so,
I mean, we published two posts about Uber, we recorded a podcast about Uber, and I think we talked about it all pretty fairly. We explained, you know, why we like it, what our reasoning is, and no one's really attacked or even challenged that reasoning. I mean, inarguably, the service is better, the costs are lower, the availability is higher.
Yeah, the speed is faster. And I mean, we should say again, in our defense of our balanced coverage, during the first podcast in which we touched upon Uber, I believe you, Charlie, took the position, Uber's not going to make it in China. We don't need Uber here. It doesn't fit with the local conditions.
Absolutely. You're totally right about that. I completely did not see how big and successful Uber would be in China, because I thought that Chinese taxi services with a service like Didi Dache, you know, would easily beat Uber.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's just clearly not the case. Yeah. Someone added us in a tweet last week which said that Uber has 42,000 drivers in Chengdu. And there are, I think, 15,000 in London and maybe 12,000 in San Francisco.
42,000 is an absurdly
It's absurdly high. But the thing that's interesting is I think nobody could have really predicted that Uber would flourish in China in this way, because the context under which we had our first conversation about Uber was that it was being banned. And that there would be no way that it could continue. And it's been the exact opposite of that. It's proliferated at a rate that no one could have predicted.
Yeah, and I think part of it was we were seeing it more as like this market service that it was originally designed to fulfill and meet. And we didn't anticipate the sort of political and social dimensions that Uber would take on, which I think have contributed to its growth a lot. People have gotten involved not just because they want to make a few bucks, but because they feel like it's part of a community. And, you know, actually, maybe that's speaking towards the same impulses that we were talking earlier about community formation and, you know, non-governmental, non-workplace, non-school place social organizations that are emerging as important touchstones in regular citizens' lives. My wife loves to take Uber Black. And one of the reasons that she does is just to meet people and talk to the drivers. And, you know, we run a dance studio and we often end up talking to them about dance, inviting them to come to our studio and, you know, making friends that way. So I think that's contributed to Uber's growth as much as the actual market demand for additional transportation has.
Uber tangent. Uber.
And that's all we're going to say about Uber.
Right, right.
All right. Anything else for summer? We had some recommendations which we wanted to go through. Anything to touch on before we get to that?
Oh, there was a thread on the forum that I liked where some people made some really good suggestions on where to travel outside of the city. If you're trying to either take a day trip or a weekend trip, we'll link to that discussion. But it's really all you need is a plan, a destination, a driver. If you don't have a car
in particular,
yourself.
That thread was about family trips with a small child. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's curated for exactly kind of that audience.
Mm-hmm. The zoo they recommended actually sounded really cool. And zoos in China, by and large, in my experience, suck.
Are dirty and exploitive.
Yeah, exactly. So this sounded like a much better and...
You don't include small kids in that, I feel like there's a far more comprehensive list of places nearby. What are some of your top places in or around Chengdu, let's say? Eli, because I know you've traveled extensively around here, as have I. I've got a couple on my mind.
I mean, the places that I really like to go to, it's a bit old hat at this point to recommend going to Zhuozhaigou, but I think, the beautiful magnificence of that scenery cannot be overstated, and even though it's a little bit over-commercialized, it's like saying the Grand Canyon is overrated. Yeah, the Grand Canyon's is overrated, but it really it's properly rated because the Grand Canyon is an awesome, awesome place, and Zhuozhaigou is a little bit overrated, but it's a really awesome, awesome place. Personally, I'm not a big fan of Lushan Giant Buddha. I think that Ome Mountain is really very nice, but there are nice parts of it and less nice parts of it. And you can either have a really great and special off-the-beaten-path experience at Ome Mountain, or you can have a really crappy pre-packaged Chinese tour-style experience. My recommendation if you go to Ome Mountain is if you have the time, take 2 days and climb up the entire mountain yourself. Stay one night middle way up the mountain at one of the monasteries there and then climb to the top the next day. Or alternatively, take the bus all the way to the top of Ome Mountain as soon as you arrive, and then hike down about 2 hours to a monastery, about an hour and a half, 2 hours from the top, where you can stay overnight. That has really beautiful views of the valley below, and you can see the monkeys around there.
One of the best things about taking the bus up to the top is if you can stay at the top and then wake up at sunrise that morning, and you have a beautiful view.
Yeah, although I've done that a couple times, and it's always been very misty and foggy, so I haven't gotten to have the really wonderful sunrise experience that people talk about.
The circular rainbow is the one you want to get.
Uh-huh. Have you seen that yourself?
I have never seen it myself, but I came really close to seeing it, I believe. The weather conditions have to be just right for you to see it.
You just saw one or two of the colors of the rainbow.
Just one or two, exactly. Regardless, even without that, it was amazing. It was an amazing scene. The temple at the top of the mountain up there is really nice. Mm. It's just a really beautiful place. I think even if you don't see that particular phenomenon, it's still great.
What are some of the other day trip travel activities around Chengdu that you would recommend to people?
My top one is probably Qingshanshan. Uh-huh. Qingshan Mountain is a great place. There are two different sides.
That's racist, Charlie. You don't have to just go Qingchong.
It's like Qingchong City to our south.
Chongqing. You can go to Chongqing. You can go to Qingzhou.
Qingzhou Mountain is great. There are two different parts of it. There's a front side and a back side. I prefer the back side, Qingzhou Houshan. It's a wonderful place. It's not as developed as Emeshan. It's not as high as Emeshan. Climbing Emeshan yourself is a serious climb that will take a lot out of you. Qingshanshan is not quite as tough, so it's a little bit more laid back. That's a great place to get to. You can also take the bullet train there, which is handy. It takes about 30 minutes, I believe, to get to Qingshanshan. Mm-hmm. Another great place to check out is Dujiangyan.
Mm-hmm. I've never been there. You know, I've been in the city for 9 years, never been to Dujiangyan.
I was talking to Jacob the other day, and he and Larry from Natuki, they do so much biking around the surrounding area, and they were talking to people about biking around Dujiangyan, and their recommendation was to find a way to get like a bus, get your bikes out to Dujiangyan, and start your trip out there, and then bike around there, because there's really a lot to see from there. I think there's some bamboo forests around there that are really, really
there's spectacular. There's a guy on the forum who's advertising like a hostel maybe, or something like a villas for sale, or for rent, right. Something like that. This.
Yeah,
there's a guy there who's like promoting Dujiangyan in particular.
Okay, I know that Max Ellie also has a villa out at Qingchengshan that they rent out for activities out there. Speaking of bamboo forests, there's another sort of day trip a little bit farther, or maybe more than a day trip, but another regional destination that's worth traveling to is the Bamboo Sea down at Yibin.
Right.
And that's about a 2-hour bus ride to get down there, and you can go into the bamboo forest. And it's quite sprawling. It has really nice views and rolling, mountainous scenery. And you can stay at some little lodges that are out there in the wilderness. That are quite nice and scenic. Inside of the city, one thing that I've always really enjoyed doing is going to the Wangjianglou Park, which is alongside the river, just by the north gate of Chuanda. And it's really beautiful. Many different kinds of bamboo there, some pagodas, some great traditional style Chinese architecture. That's sort of a fun activity to do if you just have a couple of hours in the middle of the day and you want to take people around. It's got some of the same sort of old person social activity scenes that you would see in the People's Park, but I find the natural foliage to be a little bit better at the Wangjianglou Park, and it to be less densely packed with senior citizens playing mahjong.
Awesome. Yeah. If you guys who are listening who have other places that you would recommend either inside the city or in the surrounding areas, we'd love to hear where your spots are.
Yeah, we'll link to the forum thread about this, and anyone can contribute there.
We'll link to to the senior citizen mahjong WeChat circle.
Yeah, super active. There are some really dirty stickers in there.
So let's wrap this up by talking about the recommendations.
That sounds good.
I think this was your idea, Dan. Mm-hmm. You want us to kick it off?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Seneca podcast, which we listen to and love, they go around the circle, do recommendations for things to read or listen to or watch. So I would recommend in The Guardian, a writer, Tanya Brannigan, who's covered China for the past 8 or 9 years, perhaps, as a journalist. She wrote an essay about leaving China, and it's a really good essay, and I like it, and there are a lot of aspects that I like. It's kind of one of the things that she accomplishes in doing, though, is breaking down the last, 10 years of domestic and international events that have gone down in China, like the major events.
What are those? Like, which ones?
It's like every single one. Just check out the article. It's strangely unexpectedly comprehensive. Yeah. But it's also a good personal essay on her own experience with China. So it manages to straddle those two very different purposes. Anyways, I enjoyed reading that article. Got some good stuff out of it. What about you guys?
I would recommend a book. This afternoon, I had lunch with a friend of mine. He recommended a book, which I haven't read, but it's one I'm really looking forward to reading. I've read a little bit about it on Amazon, and he's also told me about the book. It's called Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. And it's a book about behavioral psychology and how people become addicted to things. And it kind of examines this psychological process through the lens of gambling and slot machines and Las Vegas.
Mm.
unrelated to China.
Okay, well, that's really cool. You know, while we're recommending, you know, books, I'd like to, you know, recommend The Sound and the Fury by William Faulkner, the Holy Quran.
Can you get through a page of Faulkner?
War and Peace, I've heard, is quite a good novel. No.
Just the classics.
No.
Is this you making fun of me because I read books?
No, I'm making fun of you because you recommended a book that you haven't read.
Oh, well, it's a book that was recommended to me, so it's kind of an extension of a...
No, that's a fair dig.
And that's fair. That's fair as well. I've got...
No, I'm saying UI's dig is fair.
Yeah. What I would recommend is something that we, I think, may have talked about briefly on a podcast before, which is a documentary film that's coming out from a former resident of Chengdu by the name of David Borenstein. And the documentary film is called Foreigner for Hire. It's about the white monkey industry here in Chengdu. And there was a teaser clip for it that was put up on their website, which I believe is, oh God, I'm going to mess it up, maybe foreignerforhire.com, but we'll put the link in the show page. And there was also a standalone piece, which was based on some of the same footage that was put on the New York Times website. There was a short video clip, a couple minutes long, and it tackles both the white monkey sort of foreign performer industry that we discussed in our previous podcast in China, and particularly its relevance to the real estate industry and the real estate bubble, or, you know, the rise and fall of the real estate industry in China, and how the foreigners are used as a means of adding additional cachet and glamour and value to some of these chintzy second-rate real estate developments that are popping up all around Chinese urban centers.
Yeah, it's fabulously shot and edited, and it's got a good sense of humor, but it also takes the topic really seriously. It's
surprisingly comic and humanizing at the mm-hmm. same time. And as somebody who's been inside of that industry, I think he does a really good job of kind of exploring the humor and ridiculousness of it, as well as the pathos, both for the foreigners who are out there doing these absurd things, as well as the Chinese middlemen in the entertainment industry who are pimping us out.
Your wife kind of outed you as a white monkey this week on WeChat.
Oh, she did. She dug up some old pictures.
White monkey photos.
Yeah, from my model days, air quotes, model days.
She made it very clear in WeChat with her post, which just said white monkey.
Yeah.
Hashtag white monkey.
Hashtag white monkey. Well, you know, it's too late, baby. We're already married, so there's no going back.
One last thing I'd like to recommend, because I saw this making the rounds last week or the week before, was This American Life reposted an episode that they did about foreigners living in China. This was originally aired in 2012, mm-hmm. Right as I was coming back from Chengdu for my first time, and so listening to that was kind of a trip. But it's a really, really good podcast. Or episode of This American Life. We'll put a link to that. But yeah, quite good.
If I would like to change my recommendation. What I would love to recommend is underneath the Second Ring Road Bridge, the Sichuan Opera kind of live setting. This is kind of difficult to describe, actually. So it's right near the Kempinski Hotel. It's in Chengdu. There was a huge development along Second Ring Road, the extended bridge, which goes above Second Ring Road. Underneath that, they've constructed kind of a traditional Chinese outdoor space in this area. And on weekends in particular, in the evenings, there are some amazing performances there. I went this weekend and it was kind of raining a little bit on Friday night during the Natuki bicycle ride. And we drove past this area and I stopped there and checked it out. There were maybe 150 Chinese people all surrounded around this Sichuan Opera performance in the street. Under this massive highway. It's really cool.
Yeah, this is the overpass at the intersection of Renmin Nanlu and Second Ring Road in the south. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kudos to the city planners because they actually made this, you know, very...
It's a creative use of public space.
It's beautiful, too. I mean, it's under a highway. Like, you don't mm-hmm. think of something under a highway as being like a cultural space.
You don't really think of Chengdu as a place that always uses space super effectively.
Or to the benefit of all of its citizens. And it's just a good use of public space. It's basically good urban planning, and it's designed in a very tasteful way with that sort of open amphitheater stage for performances, which happen, every Friday night they have an outdoor performance there. And it gets a lot of people, and the quality of the performances is pretty good. They also have a traditional Chinese handicrafts market underneath that that same overpass where you can buy Chinese paintings and sculptures and things of the like.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's a great recommendation.
Thank you.
and with that, thank you for joining us for another edition of Chengdu Scoops.
Scoop. All right, cool. Thanks for listening, guys. Leave your thoughts in the comments. Check back for the next podcast. Check out the old ones if you haven't listened to them. The last one with Vaughn was awesome. And
enjoy summer.
Yeah, enjoy summer. See you for the next one. We'll be right back.